Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Leave Me Alone, Max. I know what I'm doing. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. Welcome to the Miami race review for a Grand Prix that was okay for a street track anyway. A mixed up grid provided some unshuffling and also provided an intriguing split of strategies that kept some of us engaged, but it's a much needed victory for Max Verstappen to restore the status quo. So coming up, we'll discuss, has Max stamped a message across the Red Bull garage? Can Perez gather himself for a triple header boat party push? Come on, Perez, you love a boat party. How long can Alonso keep this up? All season? Beyond? And more on this glamorous and razzmatazz-filled episode of Missed Apex Podcast. But first, let me remind you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're joined by the superstars of Missed Apex Podcast. He's the co-host with the second most, a man who can press a combination of three buttons while blowing down a pipe. It's Matt Durumpitz. How's it going, Matt?
So that's what strategy is. I was beginning to wonder.
So we've seen a little bit of a strategic element, and we've got a kind of won and lost strategy corner, which we've not had for a while.
Yeah, I mean, because they forgot to send out the red flag for the imaginary debris at turn 7.
Yeah.
We actually just got to see the strategy play out. And it turns out, like, I don't know, this might not be the most barn burner race I've ever seen, but it was certainly a lot more interesting than the last couple, if you ask me.
There's some debris on the track, and there's Derek in race control hovering and twitching over the red flag button like an addict waiting for his next hit. No, Derek, no, it's not the right time. Let's introduce the rest of our star-studded panel. He's got the silky smooth voice of the Missed Apex iRacing Cup. He's also the voice of Missed Apex Karting and GT something something more recently. It's Chris Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Spanners. Man, I have missed your dulcet tones while I've been off gallivanting on various projects. It's been a while since I've been on the show, but I'm, yeah, happy to be back.
You've abandoned us, but like the prodigal son, we are going to kill a fatted calf in your honor. And a man that drives pretend race cars while wrestling a cat, it's streamer and sim racer Scott Stuffy Tuffy.
Hey, Spanners. Hey, guys. Yes, I need what Pirelli put into their hard tyre compounds into my road car because I'd never need new tyres again.
Ooh, thought you were going to go in a different direction there. But that is your panel, Stuffy, Chris and Matt Trumpets. And look, the race, I thought, for a street circuit actually made it possibly move up to the top of the non-permanent circuits. I think this track has potential. The event has potential. But first of all, Matt, you brought the American
razzmatazz. And I put on Twitter, I thought that was good and fun and entertaining, thumbs up or something like that. And everyone went, boo, it's cringe, it was horrible. But I think it reflected your culture and I think it was earnest, if nothing else.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. How long have we put up with your endless apologizing and understatement? It's time for a little bit of fun. And let's face it, Miami is its own special world. And what can I say? Americans, we don't really care that much what you think.
But yeah, and especially for a country that had a 17-hour coronation over the weekend, we are on very dodgy ground when it comes to things like that. I enjoyed it, Chris. I think if Formula One is going to appeal to the Americans, you know, a little while ago when they did it at COTA with the announcers, it seemed a little bit off kilter. But now, as we become more Americanized as a sport, you know, why not? Why not make a big deal out of the drivers? Make them superstars. You've just got to tell the drivers that they're superstars so they don't awkwardly shuffle on in an apologetic manner.
I don't know. I felt like it was a little understated, actually, and they didn't make it into a big enough of a deal like they did at COTA a few years ago.
So you want more? Chris Stevens says, America, go harder. But from a racing point of view, Stuffy, actually, overall, with your expectations kind of being limited for temporary circuits and from last year, I think the track has got, it's got potential. It's a bit more racetracky than I felt it was last year.
Yeah, I wasn't too excited going into this weekend because I thought the race last year was a bit drab and the track itself doesn't really stand out. Especially, I hate tracks that got really long straights because, and as we've had the discussion about DRS overtakes a lot and how they kind of devalue certain overtakes. But yeah, no, especially after the qualifying, I was really excited. And while I still have my issues with this race, it was a massive improvement. And still think a couple of changes could be made to the actual circuit. I hate that chicane still under the bridge. But yeah, surprisingly, than expected.
Can I take issue with that? Because I know I'm the first one to talk about chicanes and not liking them. But it feels like it's an opening chicane. And I feel like they're sort of attacking that corner as one corner. And then really, it's all about how much of that curb you can risk to then plant it. So it doesn't feel like an Imola Sector 3 kind of chicane. I actually quite enjoyed the challenge of seeing how much the drivers would chunk out of it.
No, it's like watching a Hot Wheels car go over like a bump in the carpet or something. It just doesn't seem very F1 to me. It's just slumped there. Do you remember the Singapore chicane that they had for a couple of years? That horrible one. It was just, I don't know, it just doesn't provide anything to it. Like the all important corner is the tight turn 16 onto the back straight. The little chicane before it is just a bit gimmicky and just been shoved there to slow the cars down. I get why it's there, but other than that, it was much better race than expected.
Well, I just wanted to get in and talk about the DRS a little bit because the drivers were unanimous that they need to be consulted about the DRS. And as it turns out, the FIA do this by running simulations based on last year's number till they have enough of this year's races to pick DRS links. But it happens months before the race. And actually, more than a few people pointed out that the drivers actually kind of had been consulted, but they had just forgotten about it because all they ever think about is the next race. And I thought that was just a minor and highly entertaining detail about it. And they couldn't adjust it because they put these timing loops into the asphalt and it's just too expensive and time consuming to move them once these determinations are made.
Yeah, and all the drivers really complained about the fact that it had been shortened compared to last year. I mean, I know drivers love complaining about things, but bearing in mind it happened in Baku and we had a bit of a snooze fest, they were worried about the show. But actually, the DRS worked kind of perfectly this weekend and exactly the way it is intended to. It wasn't a free overtake and it was getting the cars in a position to overtake and doing a really good job, I think.
With the exception of Red Bull. I think Red Bull needed they needed another minus 500 meters of DRS if we were really going to even things up. But otherwise, point taken.
Okay, so like Matt, you mentioned in your intro, we did actually have a little bit of strategy. So why don't we go and explore where the race was won and lost? Okay, so let's start with the first things first is it was another one-stop stuffy. Another one-stop from Pirelli.
Yes, I've checked back through the stats and I think I'm right that we haven't seen an actual two-stop race yet being the prime strategy. I know we've had some safety cars sprinkled in, which have ruined strategy, yeah. i.e. Australia, but Bahrain was a one-stop. Saudi was a one-stop. Australia potentially could have been a one-stop as well.
Pre-carnage, yeah.
Amount of, yeah. Yeah. So this is the fifth race now. Azerbaijan was a one-stop. And it's the second week in a row where we've had the hard tyre pretty much be able to go from start to finish. And I don't know. I know Matt's ready to lash out at me.
To defend Pirelli.
They've either done two of one things, Pirelli. They're either being very conservative on the compounds they're selecting, or they have just been very conservative on the actual construction of the tyre for this year. And it's just providing... We need at least an opportunity of a two-stop race being there. And at the moment, it's been there isn't that two-stop element.
I agree. But even Pirelli's own target is to have two-stop races, and they're falling short of that target for a variety of reasons. I think if we're taking the softest compound of tyre to racetracks, even if they have been freshly resurfaced like they were in Baku and in Miami, and we're not seeing a push to a two-stopper, then I think there is something, you know, in the construction of the tyre. And I think the other problem as well that's leading into it is we've had the return of this surface overheating issue when following a car closely, which was a really major issue pre-22 to following closely. And in 22, they managed to solve that. And we had a lot much more exciting racing and a lot better strategy, I think, for it, because they had to push more in the races. But now that we've got that issue back again with whatever they've changed to the tyres for this year, it's encouraging A, less racing, and B, to just kind of sit back and coast the rubber a little bit more.
Yeah, the one thing that I just really annoyed me today was just seeing not Max out up front. He was there on merit, but the fact of it, he was on 40 plus old hard tyres,
right, yeah,
and was still setting faster lap times than Lewis Hamilton, who had just come out on fresh mediums. Now, I get that Red Bull is a rocket ship, but in no way, no matter what car, no matter what driver, should someone be able to be the fastest car on the racetrack with that old attire. It's just, that was just so frustrating to see.
Yeah, I promise I'll let Matt in chomping at the bit Pirelli in a second. But this is where I think the three compound rule kind of misses the mark a little bit, because essentially what we have is a good quali tyre, but a bad race tyre, and then two quite good race tyres. For me, but you know, before the three compound rule, the teams would then have to run the rubbish race tyre at some point.
Yeah, yeah,
and that would.
Oh, that's a really good point. A little bit more. Yeah, a lot of times when you had to qualify on the tyre you were going to start the race on, that would obviously mean that you had this like five lap lasting tyre. Let's get to Matt, because I think like we're feeling a little bit negative about the tyres there. Some really good points. The hard shouldn't be putting a fastest lap after 40 laps. They get to basically discard the quali tyre forever and don't have to use it in the race. And Pirelli are being quite conservative. That's the case for the prosecution.
Well, I mean, you want me to say something? Fine, I will say something. First of all, you've had two tracks in a row that were almost entirely resurfaced. How Pirelli is supposed to engineer for that specifically, I don't really know. Secondly, you have cars that are this year almost, 2 seconds faster in lap time and qualifying than they were last year. Pirelli has to make a tire that won't go bang, because we all remember the disaster at Silverstone where the teams were still running the tires the wrong way on the wrong sides of the car, which contributed mightily to that. But they have their own brand and image they need to protect, and they do have to build a tire that is ultimately safe with the amount of energy these cars put through them, with the amount of downforce they generate. And on top of that, you know, we used to have that rule. But then what would happen is all the fastest teams, you know, Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari, would just use medium tires, and then they would be the only ones to be able to use medium tires at the start, and your midfielders would be disadvantaged. So there's no real gain to bringing back the qualifying rule that requires you to start on the soft tire.
To be fair, that's not quite what Chris was saying. I think I led you down that path, Matt.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think Chris...
What were you saying, Chris? And then I'll tell you why that is wrong.
No, I mean, just go back to having two compounds. A very quick tire that is good for quali, and then you also have to run in the race.
Yeah. That wouldn't have stopped a one-stop race today.
Possibly not, but why is that?
Well, no, if the mediums were going 20 laps and then falling apart, then yeah, it would have done.
Yeah, because then you would have to use...
Then they would have just put the hard on.
You wouldn't have had a hard tire. Okay. That's the point, Matt!
No, I think that's Chris's point. That might be one for an off-season news show. Matt?
Well, no, what you're saying is you wanted Pirelli to only bring the C3 and the C4 tire to this race. The C4 tire, the soft tire, which McLaren ran at the beginning and lasted exactly 4 laps.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then that a medium tire that lasts 20 laps. So now we're talking 3 or 4 stoppers. But again, the other issue today, and I do want to point this out, this was problematic, and we'll get into our strategy. So I'm just going to bring it up. The temperatures today were unusual compared to the rest of the week. And so some of also what we saw today was the teams being very conservative because they really didn't have a lot of long run data at these temperatures on these tires. And beyond that, I could talk for 20 minutes about how the tires are put together and why they work the way they did. But I can see that Spanners doesn't want me to do that.
Well, I do want to get into some racing action and strategy in a bit as well. But quick points from Chris and Stuffy.
Well, yeah, so just on that, part of what also played into today's race as well was the huge washout that happened after qualifying. Absolutely chucked it down with rain. So all weekend, they've been laying down fresh new rubber onto this very fresh surface, and it's been completely washed away. So we had a totally green circuit for the start of the race.
I think just to add to what everyone's been saying, I think what we've got here is the disparity between the hard tire being too durable and then the compounds below that, because the medium is only one level below and the soft tire being two levels below, and then being just wearing off too quickly. Of course, track conditions, there's so many different elements that go into it, which Matt needs his whole show for. But it's just, that's why I'm saying Pirelli are just dropping the ball here with their tires full stop, whether it's the compound they're choosing or the construction of them. And it just, it's not boding well so far. We're 5 races in and we haven't seen a 2-stop really.
And it's distracting us from what we want to talk about, which is a bit of racing. Lots of tire topics up there, which I'm sure we can actually get to in the week, because I know Matt has a full hour. Okay, hands up. Who wants a full hour of Matt just breaking down tire strategy and compounds or whatever else he was saying? No, not you guys. I was hoping it would get downvoted. No, we can do that. We can definitely do that. But for now, I want to get into the intrigue of the championship battle between Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez. Max Verstappen made a mistake, which seemed to be a continuation of a rare dip in form in Q3, and then was unlucky and unable to set a lap, which gave us a bit of a mixed up grid with Lewis Hamilton down in 13th as well, Magnussen up in 4th, and the Alpines looking uncharacteristically high. So I think that was the first blessing for the Miami race, which is we had a mixed up grid to unshuffle. Maybe the secret will be some kind of random or reverse qualifying. I bet you F1 will be looking at that today and saying, I think that qualifying mixed up grid kind of saved the race and saved this from even more accusations of boring F1. Don't be surprised to see a change in the qualifying format coming to a Grand Prix near you. But Max had a disadvantage. Perez goes on to take a gizzit pole, an easy pole, but he never looked like the faster driver. Yet it's a hard track to overtake on. The prize for Sergio Perez today was that if he won this race, fastest lap or not, he would go into a 2-week break leading the World Drivers' Championship after 5 rounds. And that would have been no mean feat at all. But not to be, it looked like Verstappen had the pace over Perez. And let's look into the reasons why. Okay, so when the tyre blankets came off and we saw there was a handful of cars, Verstappen, Hamilton, Stroll, Tsunoda, and a couple of others starting on hards, did we pick that out as the best strategy? I guess we go to Matt for that. And look, we're straight back into tyres straight away, but this is more about strategy than the tyres themselves. Did you pick that out as a risk? Because I looked at that straight away and I thought, oh, it always looks like a bit of a bum's game when you qualify out of position and go, oh, we'll do the alternate strategy. We'll do something cheeky and different.
Well, I think it was a good strategy if you were a fast car that qualified very out of position. I think it was a less good strategy if you were a fast car that didn't qualify that far out of position, because the inherent problem with the hard tire going long is you either count on a safety car or a red flag to pull your danglies out of the fire, or you're stuck with essentially an undercut against you by all the people that you're racing. And in the event that they're faster on the tire than you are, you lose out at the beginning because people are on faster tires. You gain back near the first pit stop when their tires go off, but then they're on faster tires. You're on older tires. If you can't be as fast as them there, then that strategy simply doesn't work. And it worked very well for some people, Verstappen, Hamilton, and not so well for others.
Yeah, so 100% they're gambling on a safety car. But what kind of exacerbated this strategy for me was the fact that they were running on a completely green circuit, like we alluded to earlier, because of the overnight rain. So they're starting on a softer compound on a completely green track, it kind of opens it up more to a little bit extra wear, that graining that they were talking about in the build up to the race. Whereas if you started on the hard tire, which ended up being a very, very good race tire and quicker, actually, not long into the race than the mediums. So they were able to utilize that advantage, but then also reap the benefits of the softer tire towards the end of the race when the track had rubbered in a little bit after 40 or so laps of running. So they almost got a sort of double benefit in there because they were also an awful lot fresher, like more than 20 laps, 25 laps or 26 laps in Max's case against Checo's tires. There's really no coming back from that, actually. But, you know, if Red Bull were to then put Perez on the hard tire at the start of the race, then it's very likely he would have been kind of eaten up by the pack a little bit, or it would have been quite a big risk.
Stuffy.
Yeah, all the data, Christian Horner came onto the radio when asked by Sky Sports and they said, would you have started Perez on the hard? And they went, no. All the data they had, all the simulations, the data from the weekend, all stated the medium tire, medium to hard, was the optimum strategy. As Matt alluded to, if you're in a fast car like Max was, being on the hard tire where you know you're probably not going to be too far off pace of the cars ahead on a softer compound tire, once they pit earlier on, you've then got the clear air to do an overcut, and quite easily he did that anyway. I mean, he absolutely cut through the field, but that was their intention. Little did they know that race was just going to fall into Max's hands, and the credit where it's due, he still has to get the job done out on track, and he managed those tyres. But the guys at the end who went onto the mediums, they only really got a few laps of the benefit of the medium tyre. Even then, at the end, Max said he had to manage the tyre, and Lewis as well, because Sergio came on the radio and was like, is he struggling? Is there something wrong? And he was like, no, he's just managing. So yeah, medium was just horrendous today. It was tables turned on its head in regards to strategy.
Which brings us back to the temperature of the track. At the beginning, the medium didn't work as well because the temperatures were cooler and the cars had full fuel. So you had, and Perez alluded to this in his post-race interview, I had graining. I didn't really get the pace out of the mediums that I wanted, which is also why a car like Verstappen, who's passing people that he's a second a lap faster than, could pass them on the hard tire without burning them up, without overheating them. It really, for him and for Hamilton, it put the game very much into their hands. As also people would pit out of their way as they continued. So he could really manage all the factors. The other thing that happened today, and we saw it with a number of midfield runners, I think a lot of people anticipated a safety car and were a bit short fueled. So there was a lot of lift and coasting going on that kind of robbed us of maybe a couple of interesting battles at the end of the race as well.
And why is the harder compound quicker than supposedly a softer, you know, tire? Because 9 times out of 10, that softer tire will be quicker than a harder tire. That's the general rule of thumb. But that kind of 10% of the time, you're talking about like chemical reactions with how the tire interacts with the surface, and it gets all incredibly complicated. So it is a rarity.
Are you guys on a dare? Is this a dare to see how much tire talk you can get in? Oh, it's Stuffy.
Well, I think Spanners, yeah, overall, Max, though, had the best of Sergio this week. After the first two practice sessions on Friday, I think if you offered Sergio a second place, he probably would have taken it. Yeah. Max had a couple of attempts in his pocket. Look, a bit unfortunate with maybe a gust of winds. They was all cutting that curb on the entry to turn 7, the fast left-hander.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think obviously he's going to be hurt that he still lost the race from his teammate starting in 9th position. But you could see he was a little bit of a chirpy chappy afterwards. He didn't seem like a man who was too down. He was like, it's the rubber of the green. Didn't go for me today. It's a long season. Look, I'm still sure there's going to be some reliability issues in that Red Bull at some point throughout the season. Max complained again today of issues with upshifts. Some gremlins are going to appear, maybe. I just hope more than anything that might give some intrigue in this season. But yeah, I think overall, yeah, Max had the result, had the better of Sergio, and that's probably why he wasn't too upset.
No, turn 7, is that that's the one that goes into the wall of probably won't ever be a champion?
That's Charles Leclerc's corner, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Charles Leclerc's corner. Yeah, okay. So like last week where Max kind of had a soft landing with the safety car, because it's something to look at. Oh, he didn't have the pace, yeah, but that safety car, I would have been ahead. Perez kind of has the alternate strategy to fall back on today to kind of go, oh, well, that strategy hurt me. But I think you're right. Like, if you're Perez and you're up against Max Verstappen, you've already won 2.5 races, and then you get to this time on a Friday and you go, oh, I probably don't have the pace. A, you want to make sure you definitely finish second, and that if you're going for a Rosberg season, you'd need to be finishing second and then wait for that reliability thing. And then it's nice to kind of also, can you show a bit of pace for morale for the people on your side of the garage? Because it's a bit of a team game. Just want to touch on one point quickly, which is a curiosity that I hope will come up on a tech time, which is that I don't get worried for Max when he has some kind of issue and some kind of problem. I feel like when there's an issue with Verstappen's car, and there tends to be an issue with Verstappen's car and not Perez's car, it's because they're testing something cheeky out. So last year, there was a flappy rear wing. Every time they opened the DRS, it looked like it was going to flap and take off. Now they've got mega DRS, supersonic DRS. So I think the headrest and the upshifts that he's having problems with, that will all turn out to be, like, by the end of the season, he's got every time he upshifts, he jumps over a car, and his headrest is something like he can pull his head forward, and that gives him even more DRS. So I'm not worried about that. But yeah, Matt, I think strategies aside, there's no doubting that was Verstappen's race almost from the beginning. But it was just, you know, there was that factor for Perez, because you're on pole, because you've got an 8th place advantage. Is there something you can do? But in the end, you know, the other cars sensibly just got out of Max's way.
Well, yeah, that's part of the problem. No one was really going to fight him too hard because they do have that massive overspeed on the straights. But I think with regards to Perez, and this is where it gets interesting, I think the car suited Max. They got the setup. They got like the little adjustments exactly where Max wanted. He was able to maintain his pace. He was able to look after the tires. He was able to manage the fuel. I don't feel like Perez, unlike last week, I don't feel like he ever got the car quite where he wanted it this weekend. And it was always going to be a question of, could he hang on? Could other people, and could he make it hard enough for Max that he could just hang on and win? But if he did, it was going to be a defensive win, not a I'm as fast as or faster than you. We've seen that at other tracks, though, and it could come back. And Max's performance in the first qualifying session to me is very interesting, because that's the kind of thing that you do when you're not entirely convinced, you're going to beat your teammate. And so you think you have to start in front of them.
I'll declare I am hoping that Perez will beat Verstappen. And it's not just an anti-Verstappen thing. I've been a Perez fan for a long time. But this time last season, for example, Chris, you know, we were going, well, you know, can Perez beat the rest of the pack? I know it's a rocket ship, and I know Mercedes and Ferrari have fallen away. He's at least comfortably ahead of those, which was very much the 2016 Rosberg scenario. And then, you know, focus in and look at the races you can win. Look at your Baku, look at your Monaco. Miami, you could argue, was maybe a missed opportunity. But I really don't think that it is all lost, you know, for Perez. Verstappen, no. Obviously the favourite.
No, and he was very quick in Spain last year as well. Arguably should have won that race were it not for the team orders right at the end of the race. But for me, where Max really made the difference today was, A, getting through the pack without losing time to Perez. So Perez, obviously, yes, he was managing the tires in the early stages of the race. But by the time Max got up to second, he was only 5 seconds away from Perez. Compare that to Saudi Arabia, for example, where he was well over a pit stop behind by the time he got up to a decent position. And then in the pit stop, when the strategies were overlapping, where after Perez had pitted and Max was leading before his stop and able to just churn out those lap times, whereas Perez wasn't sort of quite able to consistently match those times and Max was able to just draw himself a little bit closer. And fair play to him, when Max did come up to the back of him on those fresh medium tires,
he did
make him work for it, and he couldn't have done any more than what he did to keep Verstappen at bay.
He showed him the outside at the end of that long straight, and then I think into turn one Perez really did wrap the steering to the right to just because that's a corner where you go back out. It's a right hander, and then you go back out to the right for the next left hander. I think Perez was incredibly generous, because he's not obliged to go back out to the right. He could have hung Verstappen out to dry on the left hand side if he'd wanted to.
He wasn't really ahead though. Max had already sort of got his car halfway ahead, and at that point Perez isn't dictating the line. And you know, talking about the move at the hairpin at the end of the long straight, I fully expected Max to just be able to sort of come underneath him and get ahead of him before they even got to the line. So I think Perez did a great job.
Stuffy.
I think overall Max was just biding his time. I thought that as well. I thought he was going to get the cutback done onto the start-finish straight, but he kind of just sat back. And the thing is, not to mention that dirty word again, tyres, but he just, especially through the slow section for the fake marina and the chicane and the all-important slow turn 16, he just had so much grip and drive out of the slower corners with the fresh rubber compared to 30-old lap hard tyres that Sergio had and was already struggling on. So it was just that it's the first time they've gone side by side all season and one of them's had to overtake each other on track. It was intriguing that it was respectful, plenty of room left together, and there was all smiles at the end of the race. But if it was a little bit more of a level playing field, same tyres and stuff, I think that would have been a lot more feisty. And I'm looking forward to hopefully more wheel to wheel action in the season from
above. So what we've got Imola, definitely would fancy Verstappen for that. I know it's tight, but it's a little bit more like traditional. But yeah, you're right. Perez has got history at Monaco. Certainly that's winnable for him and can probably be competitive at Barcelona as well. Oh, but it's quite key. You know, if he was to nick a couple of those, it's still wide open. We still have a fight at the front. And I think we can head quite a long way back down before we get to the next car, which is a distant Alonso. But Chris, a last point on the Red Bull battle.
Yeah, so what's going to be really key is like back in the Merck era of dominance of Hamilton and Rosberg. Those championships were decided on days where things went wrong for them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much about the wins. It was about the second places or the podiums you could sneak. It was about how you recovered from the bad races. If you're finishing 1-2 every race, then you have to make the difference in the races that you're not finishing 1-2 in. And that is going to be the case for Perez and Verstappen today, this year.
Oh, quick one. There was a conspiracy theory that Red Bull weren't giving Perez any updates, but Verstappen was getting loads of updates. That can't be true. That is just going to be an anomalous thing of what radio messages were getting broadcast. There's absolutely no way that Perez would have been, unless there was a fault in the radio, which there didn't seem to be, that has got to be a misstep on the reporting, or there's further information that's going to come. I don't believe that for a second. I do think the team had started off favouring Red Bull, and I think if it was last season, there might have even been some low-key Ferrari-style shenanigans moving Perez out of the way. I genuinely don't think there's any reason for Red Bull to do that this season, and I just don't think they are. So I do think this is a straight fight. It's a car that does kind of seem to suit Perez better, and looking forward to see what might come in the next few races. Bad news for anyone who predicted the imminent and early demise of Aston Martin as the season developed. But we are still very much in the first phase of the season. Traditionally, Barcelona was the place where updates come, but everyone is talking about Imola this season. But I am surprised and pleased for Aston Martin and Alonso that they are hanging on this long to being kind of solidly the second fastest, well, I'm going to say car, because it's just the one car, isn't it, at the moment. The caveat I will put to all of that is that, you know, my predictions were obviously season long. There is still a Ferrari and Mercedes-shaped hole between Red Bull and Aston Martin. But Aston Martin are delivering to their potential at the moment. Certainly Alonso is. How long can it last, Stuffy? How long can the Alonso dream continue?
As long as he wants. Age is just a number to him, isn't he? Who would have thought that we would see a Formula One driver competitive in their 40s? We saw Schumacher come back for kind of like a last hurrah season at Mercedes, or was it two seasons in his 40s?
But it might even have been three. But yeah, and it was appropriate. Here's what a really, really top driver can do, almost out of his era. Schumacher.
Yeah.
F1 was a different, completely different place. If you looked at the grid he was up against and then the grid he finished his career in, like, he was really up against pro athletes shaped in the mold of the Schumacher shadow. That wasn't the case when he started. But that was age appropriate. He looked kind of like a good 40-year-old. But now, Alonso's making a lot of us other 40-something-year-olds look like mugs.
Yeah. And do you know what it is? I know you said there's a Ferrari and Mercedes hole ahead of Aston, but isn't it a bit of a shame? Not a shame if you're a Red Bull fan, but isn't it a shame that Red Bull are so far ahead? Because we could have if they were the same pace as Aston Martin or Ferrari, we could genuinely have four teams, okay, not necessarily eight drivers because some are better than others, but eight drivers fighting potentially out for the win and for the championship, which would have been the ideal situation. But unfortunately, obviously, that hasn't been the case. But yeah, I mean, you can't knock Alonso. Everyone went, he's leaving Alpine to go Aston Martin?
Idiot.
What an absolute loon. And I tell you what, he's got so much time on his hands in his races. He's got time to watch the TV screens. He complimented Lance Stroll's overtaking to turn one. And like, sorry, you're that far ahead just driving around Miami casually in one of the fastest cars in the world. And watching the TV at the same time. Just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, no matter what you think of the man.
Yeah, and whatever happens, I think now, Chris, let's say their Imola upgrade isn't as good as Ferrari and Mercedes, and they do drop to being fourth. Even the podiums that Alonso has got now, if that was it for the season, you'd go, that's a good season.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think they were maybe helped a little bit by the fact that Ferrari weren't really on form, Mercedes wasn't really on form. We've seen that they have been able to challenge for podiums in some of the races this season, but Ferrari seemed to have this very aggressive setup that was difficult to drive, and that's maybe why Leclerc had so many issues, particularly in qualifying. Mercedes just still lack the raw pace. The worrying comments from them is like, oh yeah, the car's actually really well balanced, and but that just means you don't have enough downforce, pure and simple, or enough straight line speed, or whatever it is to match the Bulls or even the Astons, who also seem very quick in a straight line, which is also a key component of this circuit as well. It's an oddly fast street track where they're doing 210 plus down that back straight, which is like Monza speed. So I think they lacked a little bit of competition this weekend, but still they're right in the mix.
Matt.
Well, I like this, actually. I'm glad we have brought this up. Alonso had a very lonely race. It is true. However, if I'm looking at more or less the finishing positions and gaps, I note with some interest that Russell, in a car that he doesn't think is fast, only finished 6 seconds behind him. And I will add that Mercedes is bringing their big update, as far as I know, to Imola. So we have not even begun to see the best out of Mercedes just yet.
Yeah.
So it's a bit early to be crowning Aston the best of the not Red Bulls just yet.
Well, they are now. It's too early to crown them that for the end of the season. But our Slack channel, who's that? Martin has just, you know, he's put up the table and it's Red Bull on 224 points, Aston Martin on 102 points with Mercedes on 96. But I don't want to make this point too early. And I know I always get a little bit of stick when I do this, but Aston Martin are doing it with one car. I haven't got the driver table to hand, but the gulf between Aston Martin, between the Aston Martin drivers, between Stroll and Alonso, is huge. And that isn't making Vettel look particularly good. It is making Lance Stroll look awful. Is this the plan? Is this the succession plan at Aston Martin, that you make Lance Stroll look very, very ordinary when he was looking great against a four-time world champion last season? I hope that for his sake that there's a way back into it. But at the moment, it's looking like it's the wrong decision to have Lance Stroll in that second car, Matt.
75-27, in case you're interested.
Yeah, and so in what people are saying at the moment is the second best car. And I'm sure, like, I would put my mortgage on the fact that Lance Stroll is getting equal treatment at Aston Martin, unless there's like a below ground, below deck engine room conspiracy against Lance Stroll. I'd imagine he's getting a fair shake of the stick. So to me, that's something we've really got to look out for. We predicted that Alonso was going to come in and wipe the floor with Stroll, but it almost feels like Stroll's taken a step backwards the last couple of races, when actually it's because he's up against one of the greats of the sport. He's doing better against Alonso than I would, Matt.
Well, he's not doing as good as other people have done against him in the very recent past, yeah, in different teams.
Yeah. Ocon, but, Button, yeah.
Well, you mean the guy that got spanked by Gasly this weekend?
Oh, you mean Gasly finished an entire place ahead of him? Ooh, yes. Okay.
We can slate Ocon later, Chris. Don't worry.
But the point I want to make about this particular weekend being bad for Stroll is I believe Aston made a soft tire bet that went against Lance that Fernando was able to pull off, in that they didn't make a second run. And the run they made was just a bit too early for the track evolution for Lance to have time to move on, which is why he started so far back. And although he made forward progress and had some racy race moments, it wasn't really the track that was going to help him. And I think he still just struggles with the game of race car management a lot more than Alonso does, although he's much better at it now than he was four or five seasons ago.
Okay, some good mitigating factors there, Stuffy. But, you know, if it's still like this halfway through the season, you know, that's the season gives and it takes away with luck and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to change necessarily. I can't see Stroll closing that gap.
No, I agree. I think there's an element of pressure that he's struggling to deal with, which is quite concerning this early on in the season. The first couple of races were kind of pressures all off him. He was obviously injured. No one expected him to make Bahrain.
That's a factor.
And he did really well. And I think anyone who's played any sort of sport at any level, when you go in, you play some of your best sport when you're just have no expectations. And I think now there's expectations that he's back to be fully fitness. He's now up to speed, should be up to speed with the car. And there's the pressure there of being compared to Alonso all the time. And look, Alonso's chirpiness and his happiness and nice comments about Lance, and that's been mentioned on the pod before, is quite a telltale sign that Alonso is very comfortable of the position he's in that team, of being the fastest driver. And the last couple of results have kind of shown that he should at minimum be taking that car to a points finish, very similar to how everyone always used to say the same of Max Verstappen's teammates, Gasly and Albon, that the minimum is that they have to score points. And when they was finishing outside the points, it's not good enough. But of course, not everyone has their dads pretty much buy an F1 team for it.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
If they can keep this up even a little bit, if they keep up a good upgrade package in Imola. Have they got an upgrade in Imola? Are there some nods? Have they talked about it?
I think so.
So if they can at least be good enough, and who says they wouldn't be able to, at least be good enough to keep up with whatever Mercedes are bringing and Ferrari are bringing. I've sort of given up on anyone catching Red Bull, despite Christian Horner talking about, oh, we've got that wind tunnel thing. That's going to come back and bite us. They're gone. But I think we can genuinely look forward to an exciting five-car battle for that next tier down. And I don't think that's anything to feel too sad about. It's the second year of a regulation change. Let the regulation settle, Matt. And then just as things are starting to close up, let's drastically change everything, get rid of the hybrid engines, do sustainable fuels. And then I'd make it three-wheeled cars, and then one team will dominate again.
Yeah, Reliant Robins. There we go. Yeah, we're not technically getting rid of the hybrids because we're keeping the KERS, but we are ditching the MGUH just because I can't just not say that correctly.
Fair enough. Let's jump down the grid again. Well, hopefully there's some new people listening who heard our Acast recommends campaign. Thank you so much to Acast for supporting us for the last 8 years. And if you heard an advert that said that I don't love my children when the race cars are on, I wasn't lying. It's true. There's an emotional barrier around dad once the lights go out. And quite frankly, for qualifying as well, if I can get away with it. But we also, we offer some extra content on a Friday for our patrons. So perhaps consider going to patreon.com/missedapex. See if any of those tiers suit you, but the bottom tier has me and Matt waffling on a Friday. I think it was 45 minutes, Matt, before we got onto any F1, which I don't know, didn't get any complaints, but it's a nice relaxed atmosphere for us to talk to our patrons.
Yeah, it's a casual chat with about all sorts of stuff, not just F1, but somehow it always winds up there.
And can I also recommend to our lovely listeners and viewers that if you're listening on the audio version, for example, that you check out the YouTube as well and go and give that a subscription and a thumbs up to all the videos. Leave a comment as well while you're at it. And do be sure to follow us on social media at MissedApexF1 on both Twitter and TikTok.
Spoiler, Chris does our PR.
It's all mine work.
My favorite comments are always about how different we manage to look than our voices sound.
Come and check us out on the YouTube or support us on patreon.com/missedapex. Oh, Ferrari. They're Ferrariest today. And I feel bad for Ferrari fans to a point. Not going to get carried away, but I think we start with the very bad, terrible weekend from Mr. Charles Leclerc, who is being touted or had been being touted as a potential world champion, Ferrari's next great hope. But his stock was driven into the ground today, as I think it's something we've talked about here on the show, especially when he first started at Ferrari, is that no one seems to crash in Friday practice more than he does. He seems to find a wall very often, Matt, on a Friday and push things right to the limit. And this weekend, he did his typical Friday one, which has kind of generally gone under the radar, then did the same thing to cost himself in qualifying. And I think everyone now is starting to get a little bit kind of concerned of, well, that's not quite right.
If by concerned you mean annoyed that yet another qualifying didn't come to fruition because a certain person in a Ferrari drove their car into a wall,
yeah,
then yes, I would absolutely agree with you. And I'm going to point out that only Ferrari and Red Bull actually ran new soft tires in that qualifying. Everybody else was on old soft tires, scrubbed. And so that was, I mean, I guess from the racing point of view, that's great because we got a mixed up grid. But from a qualifying point of view, it's like, well, come on, man. All those midfielders who put it all on the line to get there didn't really get their chance at glory, now, did they?
Oh, yeah. Chris?
I mean, the bigger concern for me is that he struggled so much to get through the field. I mean, how long did it take him to pass Kevin Magnussen? And how many times, I loved this, by the way, at no point did Kevin Magnussen accept that Ferrari was going to stay ahead of him, and he just came straight back at him. But gee darn, it's awkward when your customer is passing the works team, let alone when it's for the lower echelons of the points.
This is a man, and I've said it before, who's given up on this season already. The only thing he has got to fight for is a pole position. We know he's a driver who drives on the limit and over it. And he just goes beyond that. He needs to bring it back just 1%, 0.5%, and he'll be such a better driver and a more consistent driver. And I just think he's just lost interest in any of the races. The only thing he's got to play for now is over a single lap. That's the only place they can beat Red Bull. He wants to be winning world championships. He doesn't want to be. It's a bit of arrogance as well. But yeah, he definitely seems like a man whenever he's racing. I don't want to be in the midfield. I don't want to be trying to overtake a Haas. Like, it's just, and the car is just terrible in race trim, it seems.
I'm better than this car, so I've got to overdrive it. Okay, so I'm going to stick to what we know for a second. Apologies. I am not claiming that sim racing is anything like Formula One, but Stuffy, you stream yourself on YouTube, and I think I've tried to have like an amateur climb up the iRacing F3 ladder. And what I found was I could be in the top level, I wouldn't have the ultimate pace, but more than that, as an older driver, I always felt like I was driving at 98 or 90, let's be realistic, about 90, because I was scared of going off and wasting my time, because as a dad, my race time is more precious, and I can only like do two races, you know, every now and then. Whereas a lot of the younger guys that are on there, they're doing 100 races and they are constantly going, well, win or bin. I'll either win this or I'm in the wall. So no matter how consistent I was, out of the 10 other people around me, 6 of them might bin it off and 3 would win. And then they're happy because they're kind of going for that moment of glory, that huge endorphin hit. And it feels like Leclerc feels like he can stomach those mistakes and go, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm so sorry. But for him, the moment of glory of nailing that pole is worth driving at 110% over the limit, taking risks.
Exactly that, because they haven't got a car to compete in the races and they're barely able to get podiums at the moment. It seems like over a race distance, the Aston Martin is just an all-round better car. Pace, top speed, cornering, tyres. And the Ferrari just starts off well, gets in a decent enough position for qualifying, and then just falls back. I mean, Carlos Sainz, he's the other Ferrari driver, believe it or not, but no one even mentions him. You forget he's even on track because he just...
Oh my God.
I really like Carlos Sainz. He's consistent. He hasn't got the pace of Charles Leclerc. I think that's kind of evident to say and fair to say. But at the moment, he's the one that Ferrari are kind of relying upon to not bin it and stay within the cost cap, because Charles is already on like his fifth gearbox. And it's just not a good season for him overall, and it's only the fifth race.
You often assassinate people you're a fan of, do you? If that's how you treat the
drivers, I'm just a nice guy.
You're like Chris.
I mean, Sainz can't even 5 second penalty properly. Didn't even lose a place. Do it right.
What? Matt.
Okay, so I mean, I like this psychological explanation that Leclerc realizing he won't win a race because the Ferrari is just not that competitive has decided that winning a pole is going to be his "I've won a Grand Prix," and then in order to even get a pole, he has to take the kinds of risks that most people above the age of about 15 have left behind them in order to have even a chance at that. But I find Sainz interesting in today's race because the thing I would like to, he was good on the medium tire. And this is comes from Vasseur post-race. He was good on the medium tire, struggled with the hard tire, lost feeling with the car. And Russell, in fact, passed him. But he also had a 5 second penalty. I would have been really curious to see if he had maybe worked a little bit harder to make Russell pass him if he'd not had that 5 second penalty. That said, if we're talking about Aston, it's to be clear, an Alonso in an Aston is faster than the Ferraris, not Aston in general.
I don't know. Look, I am judging Aston Martin's engineering team and design team by what Fernando Alonso can do in that car. So I'm happy to say that Aston Martin is faster than the Ferrari. And do you know what? If you want to do a kind of league of justice for the cars, which we did, I think we did for the 2017 season, Matt, and we awarded Vettel's car the championship. We're like, no, you did well enough to win the championship that season. I would be happy to take the best driver and kind of, you know, double their points and kind of judge the car ultimately on that. And by that basis, Ferrari are falling away badly. And it looks like they're not going to make progress. They don't typically develop as well as Red Bull and Mercedes. So I'm pretty happy with my early season prediction that come the middle of the season, you know, Ferrari are going to be firmly kind of third, fourth team.
Well, I will also point out that we're rapidly approaching the Binotto left event horizon for Ferrari technical development here. As in a lot of what we've seen in terms of the Ferrari car was the result of the team when Binotto was there and running it. But certainly by the time we get to the summer break, anything he was responsible for will have been through the pipeline. And that's also post-summer break, where if we see any effect from the Red Bull penalty, we'll be seeing it from summer break to testing next year. Charles, I think, had a problem with his car based on his crash yesterday. There were some weird oscillations that were giving him issues. And I think that's one of the reasons why he had so many issues getting around the Haas. He didn't have the pace. The car didn't get put back together, or there's some other problem that they induced when they screwed it back together. Too much Bondo. I don't know. At certain tracks, Ferrari will be competitive, but it's not looking great for them.
Okay. And I'm a little bit aware, you know, with shows, it's, and when you're putting together content or even doing social media, I'm telling you right now, it is much easier to be negative. And it's quite instinctive. You see it on a lot of platforms where it's much easier to pick out the things that are going wrong, because the things that are going right kind of happen quietly and without too much fuss. And so as we move on to our next topic, I throw that out the window because I think I've got some negative things to say. Okay, so Mercedes, we'll start. I'm going to start with Lewis Hamilton. Big Lewis Hamilton fan, disappointed today because Lewis Hamilton did some very Lewis Hamilton things over the weekend. And I do think he manifests issues and problems when things are going wrong. I think the team has a hard time just snapping him out of it. And I think that's kind of crept in the last few years. But when you see like a problem, George Russell is ruthlessly consistent at the moment. He seems to be going to the George Russell potential much more consistently than last season when he was getting in a bunch of incidents. But for me, very, I was disappointed in qualifying. Yeah, that sucks. Mercedes did seem to go out as a team that was very confident to make it out in Q3. Way more confident than they perhaps might have been or should have been on a track that was constantly changing conditions. They gambled everything on a last over-the-line push, and something went wrong, and it didn't go his way. But Lewis Hamilton's reaction was so slumped. You look at that body language, and in a way, I think Lewis likes everyone to see how he's feeling. I don't think he hides it. I think he's a very emotional person. He's slumped as he goes into the garage. Like, he's literally, his helmet is pointed down at the ground. He hasn't taken his helmet off. There's no interviews or smiles on the way back to the paddock. And then things not going well at the start of the race today. So he's at 13th. He can't get past Albon because the Mercedes just never, it seems to be set up to be a rocket ship down the straight. And not since, you know, the early hybrid era. He starts manifesting issues. You know, there's something wrong with the front right wing. The wing's going. There's a vibration. Something's going wrong. And you can hear his team kind of trying to talk him down, trying to say, like, no, we think it's good. And as soon as he got clear air, you know, he's, as Lewis Hamilton always wants to do, if it isn't going well, his instinct is, let's pit, let's get off these tyres. Give me some super softs. Give me some purple sidewalled super softs to get up and running and cut through the field. That's what he wants to do. And his team has to say to him, no, we've got clean air. Let's see what your pace is like in clean air. And then when he got on the mediums, that car was good. You know, the pace was good. And he kind of made up most of the deficit from the bad qualifying, which was to nearly get up to his teammate George Russell, who had a better qualifying. So, Stuffy, I think you're Hamilton friendly. You've got Hamilton. Is that a Norris or Hamilton helmet in the background?
It's a Hamilton helmet, indeed. Hamilton.
There we go. So you're a Hamilton fan broadly?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So do you share my disappointment?
I do. I think Lewis was a typical racing driver this weekend. I think he normally owns up to his own mistakes, but this weekend, qualifying, he has no one else to blame but himself. He's the one who made the mistake into turn one and turn two, putting him out of shape and then pretty much giving him no opportunity to put in a good lap. There was nothing to do with him being put out late, as he suggested to the team. And then the things this weekend, look, we know, okay, the Mercedes, he's warranted in some of his criticisms of the car.
Oh, sure.
We know it's not the best, but it should still be capable enough of getting its way through the midfield in his hands and getting through. But he was just trying to look for every excuse possible. And yeah, I mean, when it's difficult, it doesn't matter who you are, when they're in that sort of mindset, it's tough to kind of get them out of it. Big fan of him, of course, but sometimes you have to hold your hands up and go, look,
that's an off weekend. That's an off weekend. Well, that's fair. That's fair, isn't it? Look, Hamilton's got an off weekend. Not the end of the world. A lot of drivers do, but this was certainly one.
I got to be honest. I was kind of with you till I got to every excuse possible. And despite your fantastic head of hair, I'm going to have to firmly disagree. And this is why. It's psychological performance here. But Hamilton complained bitterly about not making it through to Q3, and he blamed the team for putting him out late.
Didn't help.
And it didn't help. Maybe it didn't hurt. Maybe it didn't matter. But what that tells me was Hamilton was put out later than he wanted to go. And if you've ever had an argument with someone who has more information than you, you know how this goes. You're like, I don't know. I feel kind of hinky about it. Other person, I have way more information. We should do what I say. I still feel hinky. No. Trust us. Then you go and do the thing and the thing doesn't work. And what are you going to say? Well, you're going to say,
told you.
I kind of told you so. You're wrong.
But he didn't not get a lap done in time. He made the mistake. He doesn't matter. He still has to get his head down. Okay. You've got issues. I get it. He may have held on to that quarrel with his team, for a lot longer than other people would be able to, but he still went too deep into turn one, made a mistake into turn two, and there was no way for him to really recover that. So yes, you can say, look, your team put you out later than you wanted to, but you know what? He's a big boy. He's a professional racing driver, and you need to get over it and just do the job that's at hand. Your teammate was able to do it, and he was only just ahead of you. Mm. So look, sometimes you just have to admit that it was your mistake. Ultimately, it was a driving error that put you out of shape and then made you put you on the back foot for today. Luckily enough, he was on the alternate strategy that was the best strategy.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll just add to that, Matt. He also, at the beginning, although the broadcast didn't really catch a lot of the great midfield battles that were going on, he did lose out to Piastri, and then on the overtake, ran deep again, only just held on, and then was not through his fault, I don't think, struggling to get past Albon, and then struggling to get past Hülkenberg as well. So there was mistakes from Hamilton.
It doesn't have to be a perfect weekend to be a good weekend. And the point that I would make, because I have a different data point about today, has nothing to do with qualifying. But I will point out that an important aspect of qualifying is getting your tire prep, getting the tires exactly in the window. And then the later you go out, the more traffic you have, the harder that becomes, because people slow down where you don't want to slow down. People go faster where you don't want to go faster. So that may have been some of what he's alluding to. But there was a message from Bono to him on the radio, just a little message that I think explains a lot of his unhappiness. He's like, just want you to know, Lewis, that all the cars that started on the softs have already pitted. And that was lap 4. I think Lewis made a real serious argument
to pit.
Start on the soft tire today, because he wanted to make up places immediately. And I think the engineers basically told him, we don't really care what you think. You're starting on the hard tire. And I think a lot of the, am I using this word right? Stroppiness.
Yeah, he had it right. He had the ump. Yay! He had the ump.
I got one right.
He had the ump.
One right. It is down to the fact that I believe there was a disagreement of opinion about what tire to start on. And the engineers won that. And he naturally, even though he went along with them, was pretty unhappy because it wasn't giving him the feeling he wanted at the start of the race.
We've discussed this before. When we think that when Hamilton feels like they went the wrong way, that he then almost doesn't want the solution to work because that would kind of make him wrong in the argument. And we've seen that played out on the radio. We're only guessing. We only have very limited insight into that. Chris?
Just to inject some positivity into this segment.
No!
Sorry.
It was a great recovery in the end. As soon as them medium tires went on, he was sort of flying, and that classic Lewis flair was starting to come up again.
Yeah, it looked good.
I think it's sixth place from where he was, and particularly in the early stages 13th. Of the race, was really, really strong. And for George Russell as well, it's been like another fantastic weekend for him, where he seems to be getting the most out of the car, and he's fighting with the Ferraris, he's beating the Ferraris, he's sort of clinging on to the back of the Aston just about. And I think that bodes well for later in the season, hopefully.
Yeah, and it's just the nature of the hard tire. It's not going to be great for about the first 8 or 10 laps compared to the medium tire. But once the hard tire comes in, it stays good for such a very, very, very long time. We saw this in Saudi Arabia. And he was on the best strategy for him. It wasn't the best strategy for every car in the race, but it was definitely the best strategy for him.
Well, hang on. If we can have a little look, can't we? We can look at the drivers that started on hards. So Stroll gained 6 places. Obviously, this is skewed, though, because all the drivers I'm going to talk about qualified poorly, out of position, and that's what made them go on to the hard tire in the first place. But Stroll gained 6 places, Tsunoda 6 places, Hamilton 7. He'd have probably taken that at the start of the race. Verstappen 8, and then Hülkenberg, Ocon and Joe lost a couple of places. Chris?
See, I don't think Tsunoda, Hulk, even Joe, they're not really out of position.
No.
They're sort of in the mix.
Tsunoda absolutely was, yeah.
No, please.
Yeah,
please.
He started like 17th. That car is faster than that.
No, it isn't. That car is the second worst one in the field.
Ooh, that's our next argument for a midweek show. I wonder if the hard tire looked, it was the better strategy, it looks like, but it was flattered as well by the fact that the drivers who benefited from that also qualified out of position as well.
It was 100% that. And we can look at someone like Ocon, who qualified 8th and should have qualified either one spot ahead or one spot behind Gasly, because in the first two qualifying sessions, they were both separated by about 2 or 3 hundredths of a second. But because they were only out on the scrub tire, Gasly ran a faster lap, and they were, what, four spots apart. And you can see he lost out at the beginning, eventually ran on to pace, and wound up losing a position. So it was kind of a null strategy, whereas if he'd started on the medium tire, I reckon he might have been able to get up to seventh, because he did have really good pace, and he's got, I think, slightly better tire management, because maybe he's more talented, but mostly he's more experienced and familiar with the car.
Stuffy.
Matt, if you aren't invited to Esteban Ocon's next birthday party, I mean, wow. Biggest cheerleader. That's all I needed to say. It's just...
No, that's fine.
I don't deny that he's a good driver, but wow. It's just brilliant. Every single podcast is just
well, and number that
one.
Is why,
number one defense.
And
love
that
it is
why on Missed Apex podcast, I always ask everyone who are their favorite drivers. And when they say I don't have one, like Chris does, I go, you're a dirty, dirty liar. Why are you turning my shed into a shed of lies? But broadly, the panel are more than happy to say, I support Ocon, I support Perez. And therefore, we can take that in context. Chris?
The question, Matthew, is would those drivers have made the same gains running the same strategy as everyone else and trying to use their raw pace? Because then suddenly that hard tire strategy is incredibly justified.
Which is why I said it depends on the driver. For Hamilton, yes. For Max, absolutely. For Ocon, no, not so much. He wasn't that far out of place. So there was no benefit to medium tire runners pitting out of his way and then him driving into that gap. And that's where we saw the advantage with Verstappen. That's where we saw the advantage with Hamilton, because they not only were faster and able to make overtakes, but they had a lot of traffic cleared out of their way by the earlier pit stops of the cars ahead that were quick initially, but couldn't manage the tires and had to pit sooner.
Okay, last question for Mercedes here. Okay, so I think we mentioned last week, you know, when Hamilton's firing, his peak is higher than Russell's peak. But look at this low that he's having today. Russell's not really having those lows, and he looked great and he was overtaking. He had a bonfire under his butt. My question for you, Chris, first, let's say that Mercedes are suddenly title contenders this season. Who are you backing? Who do you think wins out of Russell and Hamilton, given that that seems to be the pattern that's playing out?
I got to go for George. Because even Russell, at the moment, even if, you know, theoretically Lewis's peak is higher, I haven't seen this peak all season long.
Well, over Russell. I mean, like, if you look at the pace last weekend at Baku, he very clearly had a very clear pace advantage over Russell.
I mean, he was all right. I mean, I wouldn't call it like
it was comprehensive.
Sparkling
it
form.
Was comprehensive in terms of the teammate battle. Stuffy, who would you pick out of those two? No,
I
agree. This fact, your number, look, your numbers. Right, let's go back. Right, it's now a Baku review. I disagree.
Spanners, I was in Portimao. You weren't even paying attention.
You weren't even
the...
watching it. Right. Okay. In that case, I'm definitely right. Stuffy, who are you backing?
I still back Lewis because he's got 7 world titles at the end of the day. George is still trying to obviously bring the car forward. They're still both trying to bring the car forward. But what we're seeing at the moment is that sport isn't always about how well you perform. It's how bad your bad days are. And at the moment, George's bad days are a lot better than Lewis's. But Lewis has been at the top of F1 for the last decade in regards to the machinery he's had and the team and fighting for championships and stuff. And this is kind of new for him. It's a long time for him to kind of experience, or any driver to experience this. And George has obviously come from a lower team up to a higher team. And it's different kind of perspectives and outlooks on things. So, yeah.
This one is easy, guys. Lewis, having the worst of seasons, is still ahead 56-40 in points. So, yeah, I don't know. Hamilton.
Okay, let's quickly go down the field a little bit. McLaren having an absolute nightmare. McLaren opt for the softs. That doesn't work. And once again, it does seem to be McLaren's tactics. And I've brought this up a couple of times this season. They seem desperate to do the Jensen Button intermediate weather coin flips, and they're just looking for that. What can we do completely differently? And if it happens to pay off, we look like geniuses. And Chris, they're doing it in tech. They're doing it. Seem to be doing it in strategy. And once again, it's not worked.
It's so bizarre how they seem to be right up there one weekend, and then you know, this weekend they seem like one of the slowest cars out there. And starting on the soft tires was definitely a little bit of a Hail Mary. But I don't think they were helped by the fact that De Vries just completely wiped into Norris at the start of the race. And
Wait a minute. Are we saying that without argument that was De Vries' fault? That's not how things work here. Now,
it's just a fact.
We normally play a game called Whose Fault Is It? But for this show, my daughter Vivi has made an alternate bumper for the segment where we assign blame.
You're wrong.
There you go, Matt. You're wrong. I need to clip that for when Chris is talking about Baku pace that he didn't even watch the race of. I can just go, you're wrong. Okay, so who's wrong in that incident? Actually, I'm so surprised, Chris. There was no big contact, no big shunt, no yellow flag, no safety car, no contact. Everyone was well behaved. I was told the track was going to get washed of grip. It was going to be horrible for everyone. But it was all far too decent and grown up. Do you think after Australia, they got a talking to? Like, you lot are making us look like mugs. Behave.
I know. There was supposed to be a huge washout. It was going to absolutely hammer it down during the race. And people were going to be aquaplaning off left, right and centre. None of it ever happened. So to conclude the shortest
sorry,
Whose Fault Is It segment.
It's called
ever,
You're Wrong this week.
Despite the amazing talent of your daughter, who definitely inherited Mrs. Spanish genes.
Hey, no!
It was De Vries' fault.
And the problem is, like, we were well-wishing De Vries, you know, like, as Formula E fans, and it would have been nice to see him come in and make his mark. But at the moment, we're only hearing about him for the wrong reasons. And it's happening a lot. It's happening not just in the race, but, like, in practices and...
Tyra's like the ninth best car.
Yeah, and we basically need to not hear about De Vries for about four or five races, and I think that will count as success at the moment.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not having a good start to the season, is he? Just harking back or looping back to McLaren, a bit of a stat for you. Norris's best lap was way slower. I don't know exact, but it was about 2 seconds slower than Verstappen's personal best lap, and it was a lot slower than Verstappen's average lap. Now, of course, the Red Bull is supreme this year, but that is some gulf for the McLaren. Apart from a bit of a glory run in practice two, where Norris was in the top 10, they was just at the bottom of the timing sheets this whole week, and... yeah, not having a good time this season whatsoever.
The issue is 5 years ago, 2 seconds would have put you inside the top 10. The problem is the fact that the field between Aston and everyone else, there's just absolutely nothing between them, it seems. So
you've got to move with the times, Chris. You've got to move with the times.
Oh, I know. I'm just adding context to this seemingly abhorrent performance, which is actually not as bad as we think.
Well, it seems to often fall to me to provide false hope to long-suffering supporters of teams like Ferrari and McLaren.
Yes,
so please. I will do my best. They showed up. They have a brand new massive update to the car. And as we saw with Alpine, for example, it sometimes takes more than practice one to really get fully on top of that and optimize it so that you are indeed as fast as you'd like to be. And also for those, this was a post-race thing I heard, who know the name Gilles de Ferrand, he is now back at McLaren and working with them. And he is, well, you know, the word legend would, you know, kind of fit in terms of if you're a motorsports fan. So it's not over yet. That's what I would tell you, McLaren people. Don't give up all the hope. But, you know, yeah, false idols and all that.
On a more positive American note, the Americans did quite well. Haas looked punchy. And it was nice to see Magnussen, A, get a fourth place, and B, just look very racy. Hülkenberg was holding off Hamilton. Chris, come on, that was all right.
I legit thought you were going to talk about Logan Sargeant. Oh. And you were going to, like, run in.
No.
Danica did good. She's American.
Oh, my word. But yes, Haas were amazing. So congratulations, America. You've got a chance to win some free Chipotle now, because Haas said they were going to do that if they got into the points. So well done you.
All right. Good. Well, that's positive. And the thing is, they've got two good drivers, Matt. And if they can get something, you know, if they can recreate whatever it was that was letting them be a little bit competitive today, then, you know, those drivers will deliver. As long as it's not a podium, because Hülkenberg made a deal with the devil where he can never, ever get a podium.
Yeah.
Just a quick one on Haas. It seems to be they can't get both drivers to perform at the same time. It's one or the other. Obviously, Hülkenberg's taken most of the plaudits. Magnus has taken a little while to get off the mark, but obviously benefited from the red flag in qualifying, starting P4. I think we all expected him to drop down the grid, but they seem to have an okay car that can pick up points and maybe even take it to the Alpines. But yeah, it's they can't get one, or they can't get both of them firing at the same time, it seems. If they can do that, then, yeah, we could see him flying out for the points a lot more.
And after Gunther Steiner's shot across Kevin Magnussen's bow, rather prematurely, I felt, we warned him, you better start delivering or we're going to sack you, even though we're, you know, three races into the season or whatever we are. Magnussen did an amazing job and was head and shoulders a bit above Hülkenberg all weekend, doing exactly what he needs to do.
And then speaking of Alpine, Matt, the CEO, Rossi, he said of Ocon, it's disappointing, it's actually bad, in fact, it's amateurish. No, he said that about, like, the whole team, like, the whole engineering. Yeah. That's rough.
Well, it's the kind of thing where I read that remark, and my response is like, wait a minute, how much do you actually, have you just been looking at headlines on Planet F1? You know, because that's really not where the team is if you dig beneath the surface. But then again, just at the end of the race, I heard apparently there's a fair amount of alleged talk in the paddock.
So oh, yeah.
Use the A word properly there.
Thank you.
That some previously planned changes are simply being the way is being greased for them. Let's say that. So there may be some big changes coming at Alpine.
Staff.
Yeah,
drivers?
I would assume so.
Not drivers.
No, drivers are under contract. It would be management or technical staff, I would assume.
Okay, well then, let's see what happens there at Alpine, beg your pardon, as we move on to the podium. So for me, an overall fun Sunday, and I do wish we'd go back to specifically UK-centric timings. And I'm not just talking about the fact that Baku felt a little bit too early to have a Sunday beer midday. Yeah, I know there's rules, but it didn't quite feel in the F1 zone. And forget about the fact that today was too late, so I felt like if I had a beer with the race, I would have fallen asleep during this race review. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking specifically about starting races on a half hour. No, races start on an o'clock, something o'clock at least, not a half past. That's weird, and that needs to end. There was 1 year of it being at 10 past, and that was, in my opinion, the worst year of Formula One, only specifically for that reason. But Missed Apex podcast gives out some awards at the end of the show. So we start off positive, then we end a bit negative. So positively, we do the Thing of the Weekend Award. Well, Matt Trumpets. Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55 on Twitter. Matt Trumpets on Facebook and Instagram. Can't believe that segment's still called Thing of the Weekend. 8 years and we've never come up with a better name for it.
We are lazy at heart. It is true.
Mm. Okay. And in your lazy opinion, it was meant to be like the driver of the weekend. But because we've been calling it Thing of the Weekend, that is extended to an emotion, a feeling, a swimming pool, or a living mattress on a floppy swamp planet.
Signs, hair. I mean, you just
could be anything. It. Could be anything. Yeah, who is it for you this weekend?
Whatever clever person plotted out Lewis Hamilton's strategy.
Yes.
And despite his exceeding reluctance to employ said strategy, I think, you know, you said it best. If you'd offered him that before the beginning of the race, he'd have taken it and been quite happy with it. So kudos to the unnamed Mercedes strategist,
Derek, who put that all together.
Cause that was a lovely, lovely, lovely thing to watch.
And while we're giving credit to race engineers, then my thing of the weekend will go to the Red Bull Max Verstappen's race engineer, whose name is eluding me briefly, but I'm sure.
Giampiero Lambiassi.
That is such a cool name. Giampiero Lambiassi. Why can't I be called that instead of Richard, a name now exclusively for middle-aged men? So he's Max Verstappen is like, you know, really got the, you know, fire in his belly. He's hunting down Sergio Perez and he's already thinking about the pit stop and go, make sure we analyze the characteristics of the medium tire so that we know how much wing to put in. I just couldn't believe how much of his engineer, he didn't just go like, you know, I'm all over it. I've got it. He literally said, that's my job. I'm going to do that. You just concentrate on driving. I just went, ooh, I'm sure they have a brilliant relationship, but that was like a full slap down. That was the equivalent of Kimi Raikkonen doing his leave me alone. I know what I'm doing, except from an engineer. So I'm going to give that to Giampiero.
Yes.
Really,
Lambiassi.
I think it's too good a name. Stuffy, where can we follow you? Where can we find your sim racing stuff?
Over on YouTube, FFEYY.
We're going to put a link in the show notes.
That's my last name. That's
look in the show notes in your app or on YouTube and you can just one click away from all of Stuffy's stuff. Who got the thing of the weekend for you?
Yuki Tsunoda, and I've been a harsh critic of his over the last couple of years, and I think he thoroughly warrants it because he did just finish outside the points, but he's consistently outperforming his teammate. And now some people will say that's not difficult, but ultimately there's a lot of pressure on him this year. I think it's his last opportunity. He's the leader of the team and he scored some points. I think that's his third 11th place finish. But he's done it in kind of style. And this weekend, okay, on the alternate strategy, but was it seven places? I think he deserves it.
I'm going to have to do the angry short guy thing again with the Tsunoda's height stuff. So LL Cool J, who I love, was doing all the things. He's going, yeah, Alonso, two-time world champion, up-and-coming future stars, such and such a thing. And then for Tsunoda, he basically said, he might be really tiny, but he's still okay. He's still kind of valid as a person, despite being really tiny. And that's the first thing I mentioned. Can everyone just stop doing that? Can you just get over the fact that that's a legitimate, normal human being, yet all anyone talks about is that physical characteristic? Stop it. Chris, what's your thing of the weekend?
Well, my thing of the weekend made me laugh a lot for all the wrong reasons. And that was the new, freshly released Will.i.am and Lil Wayne tune.
What's it called?
I don't know. This is the formula or something like that.
What?
Just honestly, look it up. It is the greatest thing you will ever listen to.
This is the formula. Stay in your lane. Yeah, towards the end, they just keep saying, stay in your lane, stay in your lane. It's like, hang on a minute. No, that's lanes don't apply. It's not a motorway sport. Yeah, it's
Spanners. I know you will love it.
Okay, it's worth checking out. You're welcome. Yes. No, watch the video as well to go with it. So that's
the video actually slaps. The video actually is really good.
Well, excellent. Well, we're not doing good things now. We're moving on to the Bad Thing Award. Let's judge people.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Oh, look at us from our sheds and sofas judging everyone. Who wants to be all judgy first? Let's go to Chris. Chris, in there. What's your? Oh, you're Chris Stevens, by the way. You know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I plug my stuff?
Yeah, plug your stuff.
Because as you know, I've been away. I've been away for a while. And that is because last weekend, I was in Portugal commentating on the first round of the International GT Open Championship. And it's back again this month. We have the endurance race for the second round at Spa-Francorchamps. And it's at the end of this month, in the end of May. Okay. Now, I know that weekend, it's the Monaco Grand Prix and it's the Indy 500. And we also have our own M4M 12-hour thing on iRacing going on that weekend. But if you could just please
watch that
spare
instead.
Some time.
Okay.
Spare some time.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do.
Google or look up on YouTube International GT Open and you'll find my stuff on there. And give us a follow on social media at Chris on Racing on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok.
And who missed the apex for you this weekend?
Chuck.
Charles.
I mean, I can sort of forgive him and with this aggressive setup thing and say maybe that was why Charles didn't do well. Oh, I really hope it wasn't, but gee darn, what an awful weekend.
Yeah, some recovery needed there. Matt Two Rumpets, who missed the apex for you?
Well, since you ask me so politely, I'll respond to every single European who discovered exactly what weather in Miami is like and complained about it bitterly. Oh, it's toast. It's 82 degrees, guys. It's like, really, that's not even hot for Florida, let me tell you.
82 seems like a really high number for temperature. I'm assuming that's nearly oven temperature.
That's Fahrenheit, not Celsius, because we are in a place that uses reasonable temperature units and not silly scientific ones.
Never heard of it. Stuffy, you're back in the chair just in time. You're lucky. I was going to do my perfect Stuffy impression then, but I can't now because you're back. Who missed the apex for you?
The little kids who were spending their time around on F1 inflatables in the swimming pool in the fake marina. I mean, do they not know they're at an F1 race? Only because I was jealous, but I wasn't doing exactly the same thing.
Considering that there was very little support races, you would think that the few sessions that are on, they would be flooding to the stands, right? And despite Miami claiming that it was a sellout and better than last year, I did a really sad thing, and I went back and looked at all the practice sessions from Friday and Saturday last year, and it was very obviously less people there, like to quite a high degree. So I'll give that a little bonus missed apex as well. But that is our panel. Go and follow Stuffy. Go and follow Chris Stevens and go and follow Matt Two Rumpets. And follow me as well, Spanners. I'm the best one. At Spanners Ready on Twitter, Richard Ready on Facebook. Still some karting spots available. Look out, iRacers, because the missed apex F3.5 Cup is coming up. Very, very soon.
There's a practice.
We're going to get a practice session out on Tuesday where we'll invite you to have an open session with us in the 3.5 and we will see what the reaction is, but it is looking good for that. If you're new to Missed Apex, thank you so much for joining us. Follow us at Missed Apex F1. Until we see you next time, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.